Mr. O'Sullivan, Rail 3. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about the Home Guard, and off the tape, we just talked about that. Apparently, they were originally called the Local Defence Volunteers. Is that a...
Yeah, and they always belonged to the... Home Guard was tied up with the steelworks. Like, whilst I said its own battalion, or whatever you like to call it, Hatfrod had their own. If you worked at a particular steelworks, you were in that Home Guard unit. And my brother worked at Lysites, so he was in the Lysites Home Guard.
But you weren't involved in it?
I weren't involved. I'm sure I was in the army.
Yeah, so it was a volunteer thing, as far as you were concerned.
No, it was, but it wasn't a volunteer thing, was it? It was a must.
Except that you weren't involved in it.
No, I wasn't involved in it, but my brother had no alternative but to join the Home Guard. Same as you had no alternative to join the firewatch system.
Were you involved in anything like that then, before you joined the army? Any kind of government organised?
No, nothing at all. Mm-hmm.
Now, after Dunkirk, there was obviously a lot of talk of invasion.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that at the time, during this phase, moving into the Battle of Britain and so on?
Well, I thought it could happen. We was apprehensive. Because, I mean, it done Poland and France in very short time, didn't it? The Blitzkrieg. And I think people were apprehensive about him making an invasion. But at that time, I was in the army.
Right, Mr. Sullivan, we're still talking about the Home Guard, and if you just say what you said off the tape, that you said that men of a certain age...
Men of a certain age, especially if there was a reserve occupation, had to join the Home Guard. They had no option, and they joined the Home Guard corresponding to the steelworks where they worked. Each steelworks had the sort of their own company of Home Guard.
So there were certain workmates of yours that would have to have joined the Home Guard,
yes.
But you didn't,
no, I didn't
at that stage because you were only a young man.
I must have been too young, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, during the Battle of Britain, how did that affect this area?
Very little. We didn't see many. I think I saw one German plane over Lysites before I joined up.
So there was no raids?
No raids at all. I don't remember an air raid. That's an air raid in Scunthorpe. I was here anyway. There was later on, but not.
What about the RAF? There's a lot of RAF bases around here. Did they make their presence felt?
Yeah, but it was bombers going over. It was bomber bases around here.
What about men that were in the RAF in the town? What did you feel about seeing these men? Did you see, in terms of servicemen, did you see a lot of RAF men and a lot of army men, or did you see mainly?
I saw a lot of RAF men, I saw a lot of army men. But, I don't know, it didn't seem to affect the town at all. I mean, my mate was in the RAF. He just used to come home on leave. The only thing you saw around you in the RAF was the bombers going out. You know what I mean? I know the 1,000 bomber raids didn't start until later. But they set off from this area, didn't they? So, no, it didn't really affect this town at all. There was no bomb. We put air raid shelters up, the Anderson shelters. The first night of the war, we went into the Anderson shelters. And when there was an air raid, we got one or two air raid warnings. But there was never any bombing around here. Well, I can't remember anyway.
Now, could you just describe the process of how you, of conscription, how that worked, how you were actually called up and what the process of that was from the very first?
Well, first of all, I got a letter from the War Ministry saying that I was of an age liable to call up. And when I report to Grimsby, to a medical centre for a medical.
And how old were you then? How old were you then?
I was 18.
So that would be when?
Calling up there was 18, wasn't it? Your age, when you were up. I was 18 in the March, and when I was called up. Then you're 42, before I'd been going on for 19, wasn't I? Yeah.
So life until then just continued at the steelworks? So you got this letter, then what happened?
Went to Grimsby, had a medical. It was one of the quicker medicals in, if you could, it wasn't a medical in a way. They didn't take your blood pressure on it. If you could walk, they tested your eyesight, they tested your heartbeat and that sort of thing. They didn't take blood pressure. And then two or three days later, you got a letter to say that you were A1, B1, or whatever. If you were A1, then you were fit for the army. And that's when they told you what you was going in. You didn't know, when you went for your medical, you could have been put into Army, Air Force, or the Navy.
Were you able to ask, to express a preference?
No.
Did they take any details about, you know, your career and your education?
The only thing they wanted to know is, have you any brother or in any one of the services? Well, I had a brother in the army, in the RAs, and that's the only thing they ask. But I couldn't go into the RAs because I wasn't a tradesman. I wasn't old enough to be a tradesman, really. And I don't think they're butchers in the RAs, you know, as a trade. So I went in the army, into the Lincolns.
Now, even at this stage, when you went to Grimsby for your medical, were you still undecided about where you wanted to go? You still hadn't?
Well, we still didn't have a choice of where I wanted to go.
But you didn't have an ambition?
No.
Of one or the other of the services? And about how many men would have been at this medical with you when you were there?
About 30 from this area. All the men who went, we got a train pass, you know, to get a train warrant for Grimsby in return. And I think when I left here, there was about 20 of us, all from Scunthorpe. And most of them were men I'd gone to school with, because we were all the same range. And we just went to Grimsby and we had a medical. And then we came back home the same night. And then you'd get a letter, you know, the following week to say whether if you'd been called up or not. Nearly all were called up.
And what did your letter say?
I can't remember. I know it said report to Lincoln Barracks on such and such a day at such and such a time.
And that was in the city of Lincoln?
Yeah. It's just outside. The barracks are just outside Lincoln. Still there, anyway.
And you hadn't tried to get into a particular branch of the service. No. You were in the army. What did you feel about that at this stage?
A bit apprehensive. But we knew we were good anyway, you know, I mean, there was no going out of it. I mean, if you passed A1, then you were in, and that was it. And I think everybody accepted it.
Now, had any of your friends from school got into the services before you, and you'd met these men after they'd... Could they give you any kind of tips, any warnings about what to expect? Or
Jimmy Ferriby, who was a friend of mine, went into the area as he finished up as a ring. I saw him and he said, wait while the bloody send for you, because he volunteered, you see. He said, you take what look for. He said,
Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about your call-up still. Was that attitude of taking potluck, was that general among your friends?
I think so. Hoping that they wouldn't be called up, but if there was, well, yeah, that's it.
Were there anybody else that you knew that had volunteered early?
Yes. I had a mate who worked with me at the service. He volunteered for the RAF, and he was turned down because he was colourblind. And when he was called up, they put him in the Fleet Air Arm, which he's seen a bit of a... And that was a lad called Dennis Adamson. He later became mayor of town, of the town. And he said the same to me, he said, wait, why are you called up?
So it was pure chance where you would end up. You could have been anywhere. So you went to Lincoln Barracks, and according to your form, that's in what you said, January 1942. Mm. Mm. Now, by this stage, the Americans had gotten involved in the war. How did you and your friends feel about that with Pearl Harbor?
Very pleased. Pearl Harbor happened December 41. I mean, that's the only reason they came in, really, wasn't it? But my mother always said, if it had been for the Americans, we would have won the First World War. Because, not because of the American troops weren't that spectacular, but their equipment was first rate. It really was. Far superior to ours. Yeah, joined the Lincolns, went to Lincoln Barracks.
So describe that, your trip there.
The main thing I remember about joining the army at Lincoln Barracks, we went in to be about 11 o'clock in the morning when we got to the barracks. And there was a large intake, maybe 100 men. And the first thing they did, they took us to the canteen, to the mess hall, and we had dinner. And at dinner time, it stuck in my memory. When we went for dinner, it was past the salt, past the bread and butter, you know, and everybody was polite to one another. At tea time, when we went into the dark mess hall, of course, we was mixing with the older intakes. And instead of anybody saying, pass the bread, knives went in and forks went into the pile of bread and butter, and that really did stick in my mind how different they were after just a few weeks in the army, how different the people were. And we slept in huts, and we'd had a very bad winter, 41, 42, and half the hut was flooded, so we was all sleeping at one side of the hut on palliasses, and it was practically dumped. There was 30 men to a hut, which should have been 15 at one side, 15 at the other. But there was, I think, 10 spaces which was underwater. So they had to sleep on the other side. We was laid on top of one another, nearly. But it was, I don't know, it was a laugh in it. It was a big experience for all of us, because none of us were, you know, complete no experience.
So what else happened on your first day? You went into the dining hall, you got something to eat.
And then they shared us with kit.
Describe that.
You walked along a line, and there was men and men, most of them were sergeants and corporals, NCOs, were dishing out, and they just waved you up. And that's it. That was it. What size boots? 8. If you got 8, you was lucky, you know. If you got 2 pairs of boots, housewife.
What's a housewife?
Needle and cotton and shaving a razor, shaving brush, 2 pairs of boots, socks, underpants. You got rigged right out altogether. But very often we did better when we got back to. We'd already been allocated barrack rooms. And when you got back to your barrack room, you tried your clothes on and you swapped them round until you got the best fit you could get out of the same with your boots.
So you swapped with your fellow recruits?
Yeah. Until you got. If the clothes was really obviously too bad, didn't fit you, then you could get a exchange, you could take them back to the and get a change. But what we really did was swap them among ourselves to get the fit. And then after that, we had to look after them ourselves.
What was the, how did the army start to enforce discipline then at this early stage? What was your first encounter with orders and?
With a man called Sergeant Smith, being a regular soldier. There was 39 of the team, and they gave us a lecture. Him and the two, Corporal Pickering, they were both Rifle Sergeant. They gave us all in the platoon and they hooked, and they gave us a lecture. If you do as I tell you, I'm in charge. That bloke with two stripes is next to me, and that bloke with one stripe is next to him. They're all above you, and when they give you an order, if you do it, or do your best to do it, you'll be all right. But start being awkward, and we'll show you how awkward we can be. And that's how we started.
And was anybody awkward?
Yeah, we had one called Clemens. He couldn't do half the drill. When he said slope arms, order arms, or whatever, Clemens was always half a pace behind everybody else. And in the army, he was a platoon. One man didn't make any difference. If you had one man who was no good, then the platoon suffered. You know, if Clemens couldn't get into sloping arms properly, the whole platoon had to practice until he did. So we used to go into Clemens, get yourself sorted, you know, and I think that's how the army works, to make the whole platoon responsible for themselves, so that we knew that we had to get Clem up to the same standard as us, as we were going to suffer. Well, that's what we did. We made him practice in the hut. Two of us would be sloping arms, and then Clem would be in the middle, and anybody would just give his order, slope arms or port arms or whatever. And Clem had to, and that's how we got Clem up to standard. But it was, Clem was a bit slow. I was remember when the first night I was in barracks, was couples talking, introducing ourselves to each other, and what we'd done and what we hadn't done. And we'd had a talk about sex. The medical officer explained to us that we had to do this. If it was good to have sex in, we had to condom.
And this was on your very first day?
This was the first week. Mm. And Clem said that he couldn't get a girl pregnant because he'd been circumcised. And he was that sort of a man. He was only 18, same as us, like. But he was a big lad. I think he was one of the biggest in the platoon. But he was also the slowest in mentally, you know. He wasn't retarded, but he was very slow. But he volunteered for the mountain artillery in the finish. So he left us.
Now, so on this first day, you were allocated to a hut with
30 men.
You didn't have any choice about who those 30 men would be.
No. Mm-hmm.
Now, were you given your army number on this first day?
Yeah.
And can you remember what that was?
0029795.
And so you got your kits, you were issued with the army number. What else? What are the...
Playbook. We got the playbook. The army numbers. Well, they got the army number before we got the playbook, because obviously the clerk put your number in the book.
And did you get your ID, dog tags, your ID? Tags at this stage, no.
I don't think I got them until I was going. I can't remember my ideas until I went. I don't know what my ideas. We didn't get my dog tags that time.
But you had your number.
I had my number, yes.
And your paper.
Yeah.
So that was your training squad for that period.
And we had to go see a clerk. Anybody who wanted to make an allowance to the family, to the mother, which was the minimum was a shilling a day. Was it a shilling a day? Yeah, some of a week. Yeah. So we had to fill that in.
And so you would know what the pay was at this stage if you didn't already know.
Yeah.
And what was the pay for a private?
Well, I was doing 10 or 6 a week. because it was 1 6 a day. My mother got a shilling a day and I got sixpence a day. Because if you didn't make an allowance to your parent to, and you got killed in the war, you couldn't claim a pension. That's all we were given to understand. And after that 6 months a day, we were stopped 5 months, 8 in a week, something in pension. What was it? I got stopped 3 weeks a week for pension. Anyway, we got stopped so much a week. So I didn't draw that. I think I could draw about 3 bob a week, actually.
And what was your pay at the steelworks before you went in?
£1.
So it was a big drop in income. Yeah. Now, with your 30 fellow recruits, can you remember much about these men, where they were from and who they were? And
yeah, there was some lads from Grimsby, one who slept beside me, Bernard Crow. There's one called Jagger, who was a gypsy, sort of lad. One called Taylor, who was a farmer and was a very good poacher. Mayfield, Jeff Mayfield, his family had an undertaking business at Seaside Place. And then there was a lad called Proctor, whose house was straight opposite the barrack gates. Most of us was either apprentices or steelwork, people have been in steelwork. As I said, Jeff Mayfield was a cabinet maker, was an undertaker.
What about the age range?
It was all about my age.
So they were all young fellas?
All young fellas. I think the oldest one would be in his 20s. 20, not in his 20s, about 20.
Now, so you're in the army, you're in the hut, you're with these 30 men. What was the routine from then on in this early initial?
Drilling. Not drilling with rifles, drilling just on foot. Learning to march together, set off on the left foot, about turn, stand in line and you put your arm out to get distance between each. Just drilling on a playground, and there'd be six platoons on the same playground at the same time, and you always had to make sure you listen to your sergeant or to your corporal and not to somebody else's.
Did you have people that you've mentioned, one of your fellow recruits that had difficulty with the arms drill? Was there anybody else that was, can you remember any incidents on the
parade? Some of these lads had been in, what do you call them, not Boys Brigade. Some had been in the actual Old Guard, I volunteered. And someone had been in the, what was the Navy? What did they call the Navy blokes? They had cadets. Some of them were in the cadets, sea cadets, and that, well, they were in advance of us because they'd been used to not to rifle drill, but to obviously drilling as a unit. But the Clem was the bad one. He was a good lad, but he was just that half a pace behind everybody else, and he caused us a lot of trouble.
And did you cope with this stage of the training okay?
Oh yeah, we coped all right.
So in this early period, this very early period of being in the army, what would be the routine on a day?
Breakfast. You valley first.
At what time?
Well, about 6. Breakfast, you had to shave, and them days I didn't shave. But the first time I went on parade with a bit of dawn on my chin, I got put on a charge for not shaving. You had to shave in cold water. You had to go out and wash shave, make your bed up, and there was a way of folding your blankets. They had to be, you folded 3 blankets and one was wrapped around so they're square and they're set on the end of your bed. And that had to be just right. They would go for breakfast, come back from breakfast, you wash your mess tins up and put them in the proper places on the bed. So as we open, showing. Then we met our officers. And they, Kent, who was a lieutenant, who was in charge of was our commanding platoon officer. And the first thing he did every morning was to inspect the barrack room. It had to be swept. The beds had to be just right. And he'd go on your shoes, your boots, your spare pair of boots had to be laid on your bed with the soles up. And then everything had to be in its proper place. And you'd think you'd got it just right, and he would come and say, do that again. Not because it was wrong, but because he was showing that he was boss. You know,
so sometimes you knew it was there was nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, but you'd have to do it again. Socks had to be folded so that everything had to look square. You know, you had to roll a pair of socks up. And when we got to meet the older squaddies, they would say, well, get some cardboard and put inside your socks and they load the ship. And everything that the older squaddies showed you how to do things, same as your boots had to be polished. But one pair of boots was polished and one pair of boots was dubbined. But if one pair of boots went in to be soled and healed or mended in any way, and you had the dubbing boots left, you had to clean the dubbing off and polish them if you had been on guard duty. And it would be really hard work that you had it to do, unless you had a mate who had a pair of good polished boots and you could borrow them, which we did.
So, at this very early stage, you did all of that with your kids. Then would that be out on the parade ground?
Mm.
And how long would that last?
Oh,
if you're on the day.
Until it made me be a nappy break at 11 for 15 minutes, which would go up to the nappy, if you had any money, that was. Because some of the lads didn't make an allowance to the parents, so they obviously had more money than we had, you know. And so you'd go up to the nappy, maybe get a cup of tea, and you'd be back on the parade ground again until midday. Or midday to 1 o'clock was dinner time. And the same thing again. You fell in outside the barracks and you marched up to the dinner dining hall as a platoon. But you didn't have to march back. You made your own way back. You still had to wash your, clean your mess tins, dry them and make sure those, and put them back in the place on the bed. Because the very often in the afternoon, the officer would decide he would have another barrack room inspection. And if he'd tell you to do something in the morning, you know, like, that's dirty, that area there. If you hadn't done it, then he'd have jankers, or fatigues, what they call fatigues, which could be latrines or. But I found out later on that, well, I think it was only. The cleaning was going to be done by the squaddies. So you didn't always have to do something wrong to be put on jankers. Well, they wanted three men onto the latrine duty. You knew, yeah. But if you was put on jankers, well, you was automatically, you was maybe doing that or maybe coal, carrying coal for the stoves, and the pot-bellied stoves in the barrack rooms. Just at one end, and everybody, when it was cold, everybody wanted to sleep at that end. But, you know, the fatigues, it was an army thing. It was discipline, but if they couldn't get it, if there weren't enough men who would be put on fatigues, then they still found some more.
What did you feel about discipline, army discipline? Because obviously you've been a civilian.
Well, I didn't find it a bind, really. I was a fairly good soldier. You know, I was intelligent enough to know that to do what you was told was easier than trying to get out of it. You see, someone resented Jagger, they called him, I think they called him Michael actually. he was from what do you call them? Gypsy, not a gypsy, they don't call them gypsies in there. He's